Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the CC Radio Podcast.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just the feeling. I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling, like you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get is a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. You are listening to Believe, Paranormal and UFO Radio. My name is Cade Moyer, and thanks for tuning in. If you've had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au, or you can message me on Facebook at facebook.com/believeUFOradio. If you enjoy this episode, there are a few things you can do to help the show. Firstly, you can go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review. Or you can share the show around social media with your friends and family, and that would help us grow.
Hey everyone, just a quick message before we jump into this week's episode. This was a very special live episode held on Facebook. I was lucky enough to be joined by Don Mears from Australian Skies and Attila Caldi from Track, Search for Australia's Bigfoot, to discuss disclosure and a whole bunch of weird encounters in Australia. Our live shows also include a call-in number, so be sure to keep an ear out for that in this episode because we actually had someone call in. I guess what we're talking about today is the fact that the New York Times released an article saying that a report has been handed into the defense, Ministry of Defense in the United States that essentially say that they are picking up craft that aren't made on this world. And to me, I think that's kind of a glaring, obvious point. That's almost admitting that this is a real life thing. What do you guys think about that?
I haven't read the article. So it was New York Times.
New York Times released it, and essentially what it is, and I do have a tiny little excerpt from it here, and it's basically, Mr. Davis, who now works for the Aerospace Corporation, a defense contractor, said he gave a classified briefing to a Defense Department agency as recently as March of this year about retrievals from off-world vehicles not made on this Earth, which is a pretty damning type of statement to put out into the public, I think.
That is the first question. Then where were they made?
Exactly. It's to me, it's almost the admission that, guys, there's life out there, and this is getting made somewhere else. And where is that somewhere else? What is that somewhere else?
I mean, let's look at history for a little bit. I mean, there's been numerous political figures that have come forward and spoken about the UFO phenomena over the years. I know Leslie Kane has been involved with this with this project. I think she had connections with a U.S. senator, a former senator, or with a Canadian senator. And a lot of these guys seem to have come clean with the whole topic of UFOs, and that there are things out there that the governments are paying attention to. My biggest concern when it comes to this type of information is disinformation.
Yeah.
Is how much of this is real and how much of this is not. And I know for a fact that basically what they do is when they do release information or when they talk about information that is sensitive, they won't change a story a lot, but they'll change it enough to completely change the structure when someone else goes and tries to replicate that story in an article or in a conversation. So it's a tactic that is used. That is my biggest concern of how much of this is real and how much of this is actually a smokescreen for something else.
Yeah, absolutely, because we've got, I think it's National Geographic or it might be the History Channel, who have done this show with this To The Stars Academy, which is, I think it's called Unacknowledged or something like that, which mm-hmm. which kind of got the Tic Tac video released, which is kind of the amber that started this fire, really. And it, like you said, it wouldn't be a far-fetched thought to really say, is that a disinformation ploy used by the government at this stage?
I still just have to come back to it's Tom DeLonge. And, I mean, the guy, where he's come from, his credibility, out of all the people that could have been used to disseminate sort of information, why the hell did Tom DeLonge sort of suddenly get all these access points into government?
Yeah.
That's what I don't understand. Is why wouldn't it have been, you know, a myriad of other sort of investigators that we have out there, even, say, Stephen Greer or someone like that. Why Tom DeLonge? I'm still wondering about – this probably ties into a lot what Attila says, where it's smoke screens. One thing I will say, though, is that it does seem to be a bit more of a gradual unveiling of information.
Yeah.
Whether that information is valid or not, I mean, that's a completely different argument. But they definitely does, in the last year, seem to be a lot more, especially in the press, when you watch the press, watch the media, a lot less of the X-Files music and the little tin foil hat sort of jokes.
Yeah.
And a lot more sort of serious discussion to do with a lot of these videos that are appearing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also tracks back to a documentary that was released. And I want to get your guys' thoughts about this, is the Bob Lazar documentary that was released by Ryan Corbell, I think his name was. And it's on Netflix. Everyone can watch it. It's free out there to watch now. And that was also one of these catalysts to a lot of this disclosure happening, I think, because I don't know if you guys have seen this documentary at all, but probably take that with a grain of salt, some of the stuff that Bob Lazar was actually talking about in that documentary, some of that stuff has started to come to fruition, especially some of the details about how these supposed UFOs work and his understanding of it, with especially it kind of the UFOs being pulled essentially belly first, and we see a lot of that type of activity in these unclassified UFO videos released from the Navy. What's your opinion on that type of stuff? Do you think that Bob Lazar was telling the truth? Do you think that it's take it with a grain of salt? Is there some truth to what he's telling us?
Look, Bob Lazar has been around for a very long time, and I know that George Knapp was very closely involved with some of the original content that was made before he went into hiding. Bob made some extraordinary claims back, I believe, in the 90s and early 2000s before he actually went into hiding, and all of a sudden he's emerged again, you know.
Yeah.
And I guess it was a good opportunity for someone to go in there who's got contacts and to actually create a documentary or to revive the character of Bob Lazar. The information that I saw in the documentary, personally, I thought it was a well-composed documentary, but it's nothing new.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the same information that Bob was telling us back 20, 25 years ago. So there's nothing new there. For a lot of people, or some people, I guess, depending on the generation, Bob Lazar is a new phenomenon. But for those people who've been around, especially in the whole UFO community, they know who Bob Lazar is. So again, it's I couldn't see anything that was groundbreaking or anything that was new. He was basically recounting what he had already spoken about 20, 25 years ago.
I think as well, this is probably an aside to what Attila's just said as well. I think with documentaries, you have to remember that there's always an agenda. A filmmaker will have an agenda in as much as that they are trying to, even with a documentary, there's going to be a narrative that runs through it. And a for and against, I think in the Bob Lazar documentary, it was really just almost like a love letter to Bob Lazar, you know, like showing it wasn't so much a for and against. And that's an agenda itself. Like it was sort of showing Bob in his best light, you know what I mean? You got to remember that, take for instance, the media today. 10 years ago, you couldn't have made it. You could make a UFO. I think you probably did, Attila, make a UFO documentary and no one was interested in you. Today, both Attila and I, and I'm sure anyone who's making a UFO documentary, has a veritable queue of distributors lining up to talk to you about your film. So for whatever it is, there's now, like the Bob Lazar, whether that was the start of it or was that was a pinnacle of it, you know? But there is now an audience and a thirst for content, and this content is going to get put out there. So, you know, you've got to work out, you know, like Attila was saying, is it new stuff or is it just stuff that's being rehashed to sell it to a new audience?
Yeah,
so, exactly.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
It was very well put on.
Yeah, because like you said, all of that stuff is just recycled and put into a prettier looking package than the ones that were done 20 years ago, like you said, because nothing new's really come out. I think the only new thing that was really brought out into that film is Bob Lazar was so adamant about this hand scanner. And for some reason, this was a really big focus of that documentary, is about this hand scanner that would read the bones in your body. And that hand scanner was in multiple scenes of Close Encounters of the Third Kind in that movie. So it's very, very simple to say that is that a fake moment within that documentary, because did he make that part up because it was in a popular culture movie that was released around the time that he was coming out with these allegations of working on these types of craft and things like that. But one of the things that I really do like about that documentary is that he raises a question that not all of these vehicles have been recent. Some of them were dug up. They were excavated from sites, which kind of makes you think, how long has this kind of been going on then?
Yeah, especially when you think of things like the Antarctica and places like that. I mean, even historically, you look at the Bible and things like that. There's so many different crafts of talking in historical and in different religions, different cultures, indigenous cultures. There's always lights and sort of crafts and sort of beings, paintings on walls and things like that. I mean, it's definitely not new. But, yeah, it is fascinating. It kind of comes back to that whole Raiders of the Lost Ark sort of thing, where you can just imagine that there's one of those big warehouses and they've just dumped all these things in there and just put a big seal on the site. It says, do not open for 50 years, you know. So it does make the imagination run wild.
It really does.
It also comes down – sorry, mate, sorry.
No, you're all right. You go.
No, I think what I was going to say, it also comes down to the fact that you look at some of the projects that a lot of these governments and countries have been running since, you know, the 1920s, 1930s. And there's some technology that's been obviously recovered or even, modified since then. And, I mean, do we really know what kind of technology, you know, our governments have actually come up with? And when I talk about our governments, specifically talk about Australia, I'm talking about governments of the world here, have actually discovered through experiments and science that are, you know, 20, 30, perhaps even 100 years ahead of their time. And it was perhaps it was something that they couldn't control, they didn't understand fully. So they packaged it away and brought it out again 20 or 30 or maybe even 50 years later and tried something else with it. So it doesn't necessarily mean that it's extraterrestrial in nature. It just means that perhaps there were things that were invented at the time that, you know, that we didn't quite understand. Perhaps different forms of energies, perhaps different forms of, you know, compounds. Who knows? I know that for a fact that over the years, when I was involved with the UFO phenomena quite heavily, I met up with a fellow and he actually told me a story that there are quite a number of cases. And this fellow came from America. And he was telling me that there have been quite a number of cases in the past and perhaps even in the present where people, just your average Joe Blow, starts experimenting and inventing something that is groundbreaking. And that information is soon in the spotlight of certain government officials or certain government agencies, and they will confiscate the blueprints, they'll confiscate the actual artifact or whatever that they've invented, and they will relocate these people and even change their names. So we have to ask ourselves how much of that information or how much of that technology is actually being used today or even have been used in the past to implement into either military or some form of aviation, avionics technology or aeronautics engineering. I mean, who knows? So it may not necessarily be what a lot of people assume to be extraterrestrial. I think that a lot of this stuff is very terrestrial.
But it could be abstract.
Sorry?
It could be abstract technology.
It could be very abstract. That's right, you know, exactly. Something that we don't completely understand yet, but people have discovered it somehow.
I mean, when you were saying that, I couldn't help but think, like, similar to like a Nikola Tesla sort of a thing, a guy who's exactly. creating these amazing power sources and things and just revolutionising things, but the world's just not ready for it. And the powers of the world aren't ready for it. I mean, we've seen it. We all relatively know that that's happened before, and I'd say Tesla's probably a good example of it. But, you know, you can go through and you can hear all the stories about it. Typically a lot of in the motor car industry. Mm. You see things with technology there with it. Combustible engines and things like that, that you know, the hydration engines and things like that, that just started to move them away so it keep everything oil-based.
Yeah.
Mm. I actually think that now we sit there and think, I can't believe we're still, a lot of our stuff is still oil-based. We're still using these crude oils and stuff like that to we're burning all this sort of crude oil and stuff with our vehicles. Surely we should have had better mainstream sort of ways of energizing vehicles by now. But, you know, I'm sure, like you said, I'm sure there have been and I'm sure there are, but it must be economics does play a part in all this as well. Economics and politics.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think economics and politics is part of this whole conspiracy UFO kind of thing. Excuse me, I'm coughing here.
Mate, is that a COVID cough?
Sorry?
You're in Queensland, mate. I might have to phone your premier up, let her know.
You didn't sneak over the border, did you, mate? But just to touch on what Don's saying there, it's that is an interesting point to kind of bring up there, is how that does affect the political landscape. How does that affect the financial landscape around the world? Because and it depends on how conspiratorial you want to really get into it, because, you know, you can start to say, is this a diversion because a lot of the world's financials are kind of going down the drain because of COVID just wrecking economies all around the world. Is this a kind of like a blind side to get us to look at something else while something is happening with that?
Mm. Great time to do it.
Absolutely.
Because we've got so much on our plate at the moment. I mean, I'm still coming back to that New York Times article. I mean, yeah, that's amazing that they've written that and have admitted to it.
Yeah.
And allowed it to be printed.
It's incredible.
It's like, just try and slip it out there now. You know, that it's almost like they have a quota that they have to fill of disinformation. So we're going to try and get as much out as we can now in the for the next 6 months.
That's an interesting point, because someone made a comment up here earlier on the chat here. And for anyone watching, if you have any questions for any of us, just let us know, and I can put the questions up on our screen, and we can answer them if they're worthy of a good conversation there. But something like, people said that it's potentially a smokescreen, and that Tom DeLonge is potentially just being used for misinformation because of his public profile.
Yeah,
that's a good point, actually. Yeah, it's a very good point. Can't see, I mean, I can't see it being, or being impossible, to be honest. As to how far it goes, we don't know, but we know that there are celebrities that are involved with UFO movements, so it's nothing new, you know. Like, there's, you know, I think Tom Cruise, and he's a member of MUFON. There's Dan Aykroyd, who did documentaries back about 20 years ago. I think it was Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs. I think that's what he called it. So yep. I think he's also an active member of MUFON. So, you know, having these high-profile celebrities being involved with, you know, the actual UFO phenomena is not an uncommon thing. And again, you know, is this something that's, you know, for the current generation, is it something new for them? You know, it's, you know, it's it could be a smokescreen, could be legitimate.
And something that kind of got raised here in a chat window here is, what's your thoughts about this when it comes to UFOs and the level of high strangeness that goes along with that? Do you think that's a connection, or do you think that's just something absolutely random when it comes to this whole crazy topic?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think there's an element to that. And I'm not sure what it is. I'm not sure if it's external or internal.
Yeah.
I have at times sort of thought that I've experienced that myself. And I've often, as opposed to thinking that everything's external, a lot of times I'm wondering if it's part of the human psyche that when you come into contact with something, whether it's your fight or flight, you know, or adrenaline starts to get flooded into your system and all this sort of stuff, is that something that reacts as a physiological sort of an activation that happens? But no, I don't discount it. I don't discount it. You're talking about like an Oz effect, that sort of strange Oz effect thing where when something starts to happen, everything just starts to shut. Everything goes really quiet.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. So what was the...
So you've probably, I mean, we've had those before ourselves together doing stuff. You've had them as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, there have been a number of incidences that have... that are very similar to that. There was one here in Minto back in 1999, which is over 20 years ago now, and it almost like it happened yesterday. But of course, that was surrounded by very similar, you know, phenomena. There were sightings over in Narrabeen, which was accompanied by again very similar phenomena, where everything just almost like nothing else exists apart from the event itself. I've, as Don said, we've experienced things like that, but I think if you're involved with this long enough, and Don and I are, I'd regard Don and I as trained observers, because we're filmmakers, and our job is to record, you know, the reality of the world, no matter how odd it is. That's our job. So we have to rely on our primary senses to be able to document and to convey that over to an audience. I think I have enough trust in my senses to be able to determine what is something that my mind is fabricating or something that is actually happening in this reality. Now, again, some people will say, well, whether or not you're tapping into another dimension, another form of reality, I mean, look, I mean, this conversation can go on and on and on and on like a snowball effect. But I think I have enough trust in my own observation that if I were to see something like that again in the future, I think I would have enough trust to legitimize that. Just to give you an example of strangers, because we're talking about this with Don, I was actually telling him this story about a month ago. I was out filming the next edition to Track, and nothing happened really. So we hiked back to our vehicle, my vehicle, which was parked on this dirt road. It's a very isolated spot, very hilly. There was this dirt track that wound around a cliff face. There was a drop-off on the other side, no vehicles, no nothing. It was dead silent. And that was really odd too, because it was very, very silent. And we saw this diffused light spill over the bushes on the other side of the road. It was like something was approaching, but it wasn't. The lights weren't strong enough for a headlight. If it would have been a headlight, then it would have been somebody with parkas on driving, you know, in pitch black on a dirt road with a drop-off on the other side without railings. And then this light emerged. It came around the corner and stopped and hovered about a meter above the dirt road. And it was in the middle of the dirt road. And it was almost like it came to a sudden stop because it saw us. And it was sitting there for a few seconds. And next minute, this almighty glare like an explosion, and it was gone.
Oh, wow.
That was it. We heard nothing. There was no sound associated with this explosion type finale, but I had never in my life seen anything like that. Now, there was also another independent witness that saw this as well, who was with me at the time. So there was three of us there. One guy who was, I don't recall what he was doing at the time. I think he was going through his backpack. And this other fellow who was actually standing there, we were both watching the same phenomena. Now, seeing something like that and having a second party with you to corroborate the information, I guess gives you more... more credence to the fact that what you're actually seeing is real, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
So next time that you're out in the field and you know exactly that feeling, or you know that you're in a very similar situation and you see something, you can then say, well, I'm going to rely on my senses here, because, yes, I consider myself as a rational, logical person, but what I am seeing is completely out of the realm of everyday conventional explanation. So, yeah, I guess I'm just giving you an example there of how something that you see is happening and is present in this reality, in this time, as opposed to something that you feel could be a fabrication of the mind, unless you're under the influence of something or so extremely tired that you're falling in and out of consciousness and you start to hallucinate. That's a completely different condition to be in. But when you're completely alert and aware of your environment, it's a different story altogether.
Yeah, I'll say one more thing about that, actually. I noticed that we filmed and film a lot. We were filming a lot of, you know, making the Australian Skies stuff, but also a lot of paranormal shows and things like that prior. And it really got to the point where we, and me personally, I could go into these environments, and if I'd be with people or on my own or whatever, and I could almost, not almost, I could tell when things were going to kick off just watching the people that we were with. If we were doing a show about a particular group or individuals or things like that, we could go in, and even filming with you, until I'm sure that there's been times you and I have, we've had nods where we go, it's going to go on that direction, and this guy's going to go off.
Yeah.
And you just know, the other thing that we found as well with this Oz factor thing is that it compounded as well. It would start with something small and then something small, and then it would go, and then it would almost escalate into a huge thing and then drop off sometimes just as quick, but leaving everyone just going, what the hell is going on, you know? And after a while of filming this sort of stuff and watching it, you do get an instinct for it, and it's going to kick in.
Absolutely. If you do it long enough, mate, you know the feelings. You have to identify those feelings. And sometimes the reactions, regardless how often it happens, sometimes you're not quick enough to be able to catch it on camera. But a lot of people say that, you know, well, you know, okay, it's all good and well, you've been out there so long, you know, doing this for so long, how come you haven't caught anything of substance? And it's easier said than done. It's these things are very, very unpredictable, and you could be filming a crew member when something happens behind you, you know, and the last thing is, the first thing you see on is basically this crew member's facial expression change suddenly, and by the time you turn around, the last thing you think is, like, I'm going to aim my camera first and then I'll turn around, because you don't know what's behind you. You know, is it a threat or is it something of interest? You don't know.
That's it. I mean, it's an interesting argument as well. They say you haven't caught anything. I think we've caught lots of things of substance.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
The fact is, though, that people can only watch and see, and I would say possibly 70% of the experience is what is being felt.
Mm.
And when you're in the environment, this whole thing is going off, and the camera's just sitting there picking up, well, you know, what's going, what can it pick up, what can it see?
Mm.
But yeah, it's so frustrating, because people actually need to be in these environments themselves, in these situations, and then walk away going, whoa, that just blew my mind, because there's so much more to us, and there's so much more to these experiences than just what we look at with our eyes and what we can, you know. And
it's the human experience at the end of the day. That's what it is.
Yeah, and there's lots of emotion with it as well. That's the other thing that I find quite unique, is the emotion that happens when people are experiencing this Oz factor or these kind of strange experiences. And you can't really capture that.
Mm.
You try to, especially with a camera, you try to, but you can't really quite get it. And oftentimes they don't quite know. When the more intense experience someone's happening, 90% of the time they will just shut right down and just be like a statue, because they just don't know how to. And the camera's going, well, they're being boring. You go, no, the guy's internally combusting. You know?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
I think one of the best examples of capturing something like this was actually in your most recent documentary of Australian Skies 3, the Search for the Min Min, where we see you and Attila out searching for Min Min lights in Boolia, and you're encountering something, and Attila suddenly sees a shadow person in the darkness there, and you were fully captured there.
This is a classic example. You're exactly right. I mean, I know Attila constantly going, oh my God, but it is a classic example of.
No. I'm just recounting the experience, the feelings of it. It's sorry.
In these situations, and you start to see how people can be unbuilt, and how these situations can unbuild someone. And it's fascinating to be able to film it, and fascinating, but it's also terrifying to see yourself get unbuilt as well and get caught up in it.
It makes you very vulnerable as a person, because you show a side of yourself that you don't usually show to people, you know. But in situations like that, you're in the moment, and the last thing that's on your mind is that there's a camera rolling. I mean, who gives a shit if a camera's rolling or not? You know, I'm experiencing this. We're experiencing this together. You know, it's not something that you experience on a daily basis. And correct me if I'm wrong, Don, but these experiences, every time you have one, they're all different. Doesn't matter how similar they are, they all have their own variations.
Yeah. When you and it's not just the UFO and stuff, the ghost stuff as well. And argue, you know, what ghosts and what it is, and what, like, I still sit there and I go, not sure, you know, but I do know that there is an effect on a human when you go into these environments, and that's fascinating in itself, to try and work out what it is.
That's right.
Absolutely.
I've managed to capture that on video too, in the series called Phasmophobia that we did back in 2013, 2014. You can see the effects of what something can actually do to a human being. And that fellow who was affected at the time, he wasn't the only person. There were other male figures prominently that got affected by this, and people who you'd think that were as placid as they get turn into this violent entity. And it's somebody, it's almost like a Jekyll and Hyde coming out. It's for lack of a better expression, but I've actually personally experienced that myself, so I know what it's like. And it's I had bones broken because of that.
Wow.
And I'll be the first one to admit it. I don't usually go out and tell people that, but it actually happened to me too. So it's not something that you can play with very lightly, I can assure you.
Far out. Sorry to jump in there, guys, but we do have a caller live on the air. So do you mind if we bring them in? They may have a question for you both. Paula, yeah, you're sure. Live on the air. What's your name and where you're from?
Gary from Port Macquarie.
G'day, Gary. How you doing, mate?
Good, and yourself?
Very good, very good. We've got you live on the air.
Mine is not a question, but a sighting I saw as a kid in the Blue Mountains of New South Wales.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you want to share that with us?
Yeah, I was probably back in about 1981, 1982, where my grandparents used to live in the Blue Mountains. You used to be able to see the lights of Sydney lit up at nighttime. And I remember as a kid being drawn to the window looking at the lights of Sydney, and I was around with a few other family members. We saw this white solid orb going back and forth over the city skyline. And that experience has never left me. Like, it went on for about 5-10 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So ever since that experience, I've read and heard that the Blue Mountains are quite a hot spot.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right.
We've had some absolutely very interesting times in the Tillers, had just with the world, but we've had some amazing adventures up there.
We have.
All right, thanks, guys.
You know.
And now a quick word from our sponsor.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Also, are you wanting more content? Why not become a Believe Plus member? You'll get access to exclusive podcasts and episodes that aren't available to the public. Not only that, you'll also get our regular feed without any ads. Head to believepod.com/plus to sign up today for just $5 a month. Continue what you're saying. Yeah, the Blue Mountains are absolutely a hotspot.
Look, they are. I actually saw an image, a fellow that took a photo up around Wentworth Falls, and he was just taking some random survey images, and he actually happened to catch a photo of his cylindrical shaped craft that was hovering in the sky on a 45 degree angle. And it was quite substantial in size because you can see that it had some atmosphere with it. So it was quite a distance away. But we've personally seen stuff out there. You know, I used to do a lot of expeditions out in the Blue Mountains hunting for these things. And some of the encounters that we've had were just absolutely remarkable. And one particular one that I had probably going back around 2006, 2007, around McMahon's Lookout. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning. And we were doing shifts. So we had some people sleeping and we had some people awake. At this point in time, everybody sort of got up and got out of their tents, and it was very, very misty because it gets very misty out there. And we saw this rotating light in the mist within close proximity to us. And it was just sitting there. We didn't see structure or anything like that. All we can see that we're on top of a cliff. And this thing was just in midair. There was no sound whatsoever. All we can see is just these lights rotating really, really fast within the mist itself.
Wow.
It was scary. I'll admit it. It was very, very scary because you don't know what the hell you're dealing with. It was quite large. And then this thing just basically just gradually went back into the mist and just disappeared. So, I mean, these are some of the stuff that people have experienced in the mountains. And like Don said, I mean, we've had some really interesting encounters up there in that place. I don't know. I mean, you can compare it with like a mixture of Rendlesham Forest and the Sierras. I mean, it's just and mystical forests of Europe in Norway. You know, I mean, it's just got everything there. It's just got a plethora of different phenomena that I have personally also experienced over the years that I've been going up there, which has been about 20 years now.
I think the first time I went up there was with Attila. Actually, the first time we actually went out together, Attila, I was making a show called The Spirit Level, and I was going around Australia doing all these different topics and, you know, ghosts and stuff like that, and going to different parts of Australia filming for this show. And this episode we were doing all on Yowies. And I thought, you know, and I was always a little bit like, oh, this is going to be a hard one because Yowies, you know, they're not, you know, I don't really think there's much to it per se. And we went up and we filmed it all on this episode too. And it was my first time up in this particular area. And holy smokes. I'm pretty skeptical of the whole sort of thing, but mate, if we didn't get rocks pegged at us, things screaming off into the in the distance, and things moving around, things crapping on, you know, on pathways that we were walking on, like just it was just unbelievable. Oh, God. And yeah, and you know, just to have a group, there was Craig Powell, yourself, and myself, and that was one of the first. That was one of the first times I went, "Wow, this is." It's just an old area, and I know that Rendlesham Forest and all this sort of stuff. I think with Australia, when you get out away from the cities and you get away from all the bright lights, and you kind of go back out into regional Australia, it feels old. But it feels alive. It really feels alive. As opposed to walking into a spooky forest and blah, 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 there's something much more motivated when you go into places like the Blue Mountains, and especially when you go out there with the intent of having a look around. It's almost like it's rubbing its hands together going, wow, here we go. This is going to be great. And it's just Halloween for them. We've got door knockers, kids. This is great. And you've really got to be careful what you wish for, because it might just, you know, come and grab you.
Absolutely. I get a lot of people who contact the show who say they have these weird experiences in places like this. And one of the experiences people ask me a lot about, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, because it's very much a US-based phenomenon, and I've only really heard of maybe two or three encounters of this ever happening in Australia. But have you guys ever heard of or encountered anyone or even experienced something yourself regarding the dog man?
No, not in Australia. I had an experience in Europe, actually my son did. He had a full-on encounter with something that was very similar to a dog man. And I can talk about that if you guys want to. But
absolutely.
It's in Australia, I haven't really had anyone or any reports that I can recall that would relate to creatures that would resemble a dogman or a werewolf type sort of entity, I guess, because that's what we're looking at, I guess, a lichen.
Yeah, I've been fascinated with them. I've been listening to a lot of the American podcasts that have people calling in with their experiences, and it definitely in the last 10 years seems to be one of those phenomena that is taking the field, the cryptid field, not by storm, but it's definitely something to talk about. It's almost like the black-eyed children. They kind of came along at the same time. Have you heard of the black-eyed children?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So kind of seemed to pop up around the same time and started to creep into the lexicon that we're kind of talking about, the paranormal. But I can't can't say, you know, I'm sure there's people out there that have had experiences with it, but like Attila said, it's a minimal sort of thing here, but who knows what, you know, what they could be.
Yeah, I've had one person come on the podcast to share an encounter, and they weren't even really aware that what they had was a dog man encounter. It was only from the information that I really extracted from them, from talking to them, that it came to my attention that it was a dog man encounter. And this individual was actually out on a ghost hunt, and they're part of a paranormal team down in Brisbane, and they were walking through the bush just outside of the CBD, is my understanding of this. And this lady turned around, and essentially this dog man creature kind of rushed her, and she screamed, turned around, and it was gone again. So I think there's a very, very paranormal aspect to that type of creature, because everything I hear about it, it seems to be more of a demonic creature rather than a flesh and blood creature like you would think of the Yowie or something like that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've heard of reports where these things were chasing like herds of deer and animals like that, so they're actively hunting for flesh and blood. So I don't know. Maybe there is a portion that is, Kate. I'm not sure. But the encounter that, if you guys have got a moment, that when I was over in Europe, I finished filming Ghosts of Europe. And this was back in 2017. And I was visiting my brother over there, who have unfortunately since passed on. And we were coming back at 8 o'clock in April. So it's still sort of, it's reverse seasons over there. So it's springtime, early spring. And it still gets pretty cold and dark pretty quick. So it was about 9 o'clock, I think it was 8 or 9 o'clock at night. We were traveling home, and we're going back to the hotel room. I had my daughter at the front of the car, and my son was at the back of the vehicle. And we're leaving this small little town, this small village, and we're coming to an open road. And one side of both sides of the road had fields of corn, and I think canola fields. And there was, on the left-hand side, there's a stretch of trees. And those trees basically ran into a very dense national parks area that runs across the Danube and sort of spreads out. And I could have been doing about 60 or 70 kilometres an hour. And I noticed that on our left-hand side, there was this two red lights, very small lights that were basically following us. And there are no roads there because it's all fields. After the fields, you've got this row of trees and that's it. There's no roads, no nothing. And this thing was basically pacing with us, whatever it was. And I thought, well, it could be someone on a trail bike, or what the hell is this? And next minute, this thing accelerated, crossed the road in front of us, not directly in front, it would have been about 100 metres, maybe a bit more in front of us. So all we saw was something large crossing the road. And it went into the field on the other side. And the curiosity got the better of me, so I stopped the car, put it in reverse. I said to the kids, look, let's have a look and see what the hell this is, because my daughter and I saw it cross. I don't know if my son saw it actually cross. So we reversed back, and there's this tree on the side of the road on the right-hand side, and that's got massive canola fields as well. And that kind of keeps going until there's a railway track and vineyards, and then there's a massive hill over there and another national park's over there. And he looks back, and obviously with my reverse lights and the brake lights and everything else on, he quickly starts hitting the back of my chair and says, "Dad, let's get the hell out of here now. We've got to go now." So he saw something. He wouldn't tell me until we got to the hotel room. It was very, very shaken up. And we saw something was in the tree. I saw something. My daughter saw something was in the tree, but we couldn't really make it out. But he had full view of it. And when he described it, it was basically a really weird creature that he saw. The tree would have been about probably 6 or 7 meters tall, and this thing probably encompassed about half of that, maybe even more, and it was on the actual tree looking down at us. The face was like that of a canine, a large canine face, and the head was out of proportion to the body. The body was basically clinging on to the actual tree itself. So you can imagine how big this bloody thing was. But he said he didn't see any fur. It didn't have fur on it. It was almost like a I don't know if you call it sinewy type sort of skin. It was like very sickly looking, very sort of patchy color. It was almost like it was sick or something like that. And this thing was basically glaring down at the car. It looked like it wanted to jump on the bloody car.
Oh, wow.
So when he said, look, get out of here, I accelerated quick smart. I didn't get full view of it, but my son did, and he drew a sketch of it later on. He was really shaken up. It was almost hysterical. These things aren't how can I put it? These things like this do happen in Europe, but the thing is with Europeans, they're very religious people, and they don't like talking about things like that because they believe that some cultures believe that they actually invoke, evil spirits and evil entities. So even if they see something, they won't tell you, they won't talk, they will completely shut down. These things have been in European folklore for hundreds, if not thousands of years.
Yep. That's terrifying, mate. I feel for your kid. That would have scared the crap out of absolutely anyone. And the fact that he saw that so vividly that he can draw it, that's spooky stuff, mate.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't mind going back, to be honest.
Yeah.
and doing a stakeout in that forest over there or nearby, because I think there's a lot more going on there than what meets the eye.
Yeah, and it sounds like this dogman, it had mange or something like that. It had an ailment to it. So it kind of, you wouldn't imagine something that was a paranormal creature would have the ailments of the physical world, really.
Yeah. Who knows what it was, mate, to be honest. I don't know.
What would be, Attila, some of your recommended scary locations in Australia?
give us a top five.
A
couple. So that and what I'd like is if anyone who's listening can recommend a couple as well.
Yeah, actually.
I'll give a recommendation as long as I get a recommendation.
All right. Those people watching, put it into the chat. We'll get it up on the screen.
Yeah, definitely the Blue Mountains is definitely one of them. Penrose State Forest, definitely.
And are you able to give us just a little bit of a rundown of why these locations would be kind of hot spots? Like what would someone experience in those areas?
The Blue Mountains is kind of speaks for itself because, there's everything there.
Yeah.
Pretty much. There's a plethora of weird stuff, you know, even during the day. But when that sun sets, mate, that whole area just turns into something else. It's almost like it travels to a completely different dimension or to a different reality. I don't know, mate. It's just takes a personality on its own. Penrose State Forest, I've been there a few times. We've seen some really weird stuff, mate. I don't even know where to begin. There was one sighting there. Again, my son actually saw it. We were out there filming an episode of PI Uncut, and we didn't actually include that because my daughter had a very bad experience there, so we ended up cutting that out completely.
Oh, wow.
But what he actually saw there at one point was this almost like a triangular craft that was kind of skewered a little bit, but this thing was cruising between the actual pine trees, and it almost like he said that the structure looked like as if it had like large either plates or scales on it, but it was like a dark gray scale. This thing just basically was very flat, it was very large, and it just cruised between the trees without any sound. From really weird paranormal stuff there, mate. It is. I don't know what that place is. I mean, who knows? Maybe it was a burial ground for serial killers at one point in time. I don't know. It's just, again, that place is just very, very unique. They're kind of the two major places that are within my proximity. I mean, I can keep going, mate. I mean, there's quite a few areas, and Don, you know quite a few of them as well.
I'll trade you. I would go the Pilliga. That's in New South Wales. And the Pilliga Forest or the Pilliga Scrub. And that's a very renowned area. It's kind of a Coonabarabran. And then I suppose it goes through the Narrabri. But right in the middle, you've got these little towns, Barradine, and then you have this very small, which is almost in the center of the Pilliga Scrub, and it's called Wobbegar. It starts with a silent G, so it's a silent G, W-A-B-G-A-R. And I grew up there. And that was a very interesting place. We grew up on a farm there. And my father was a farmer, and he was best friends with the local police officer there. And the police officer would come out to have a beer with Dad once a week, you know, and have a bit of a chat and talk about stuff. And I used to come out and try and listen to these guys in the late afternoon as they were talking about what was happening. And I can remember this officer talking about all strange things that happen. And Dad used to love it. He used to sit there and go, okay, what's weird happened this week, you know? And there was always something strange that had happened in the Pilliga. And I can remember that a group of teenagers were coming back, I think, from Coonabarabran, and they were in a car, and they reckon they got chased by lights. And back then, it wasn't a sealed road. It was a dirty dust road. And you could see a car for miles because of the dust clouds would come behind the car. But these kids, they reckon they got chased by a huge light through the Pilliga scrub, so much so that they had an accident when they finally got into Wobbegar.
Oh, wow.
And made the report. Other ones were just heaps of Bigfoot Yowie sightings, just massive. Always there'd be a truck driver that would come into the police station freaking out. Big burly guys back then who were just shitting themselves with stories of how they had a flat or they pulled over to have a sleep, and then they were woken with the whole rig being shook and then screaming and things they were seeing and stuff like that. And then you know, there's also ghostly apparitions that appeared along that road late at night. Now, that's a place that I think even trumps the Blue Mountains. That place, I think, is the most alive and vibrant area in possibly Australia.
Yeah.
If you can have a look around, get to the Pilliga Scrub, that one. That's pretty wild, that place.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a couple of episodes coming up with a individual who had an absolutely terrifying Yowie encounter in there. One of her friends got knocked unconscious because of it. And so it's that's a little tease for all the listeners to keep an eye out for a Yowie episode dropping next season. But yeah, super, super terrifying stuff that happens in there, because I know Dean Harrison over at Australian Yowie Research. I swear, you look at his YouTube channel and he would have about 20 videos for the Pilliga region. It is absolute hotspot for weird stuff.
Yeah. Well, I've had personal first-hand account of the Pilliga scrub as well. So when we were up there filming the last episode of Phasmophobia, it was a special that we did. It was a short documentary called Hunt for the Indigenous Yowie, which is on Very Paranormal Network. It's one of my early stuff, not that good, but the content was actually pretty decent, because some of the things that we experienced there, one of the guys actually had a massive rock thrown at him, and it was actually recorded, exploded right behind him. And we had rocks thrown at the car, so we had to get out of there. We saw a massive shadow across the road at one point in time. So, again, we didn't want to hang around because it was getting too close. You can actually smell it was like a wet dog and disgusting type smell, you know. Not a wet dog, it was like a wet animal, you know, like a sheep or a dog. Yeah, I mean, it was like a wet animal smell. But funny enough, when we were there, we were trying to attract attention, and we could hear the dogs from the distant farms, you know, start barking in the distance, and the barks got, you know, closer and closer, because all the consecutive farms there the dogs were agitated by something that was moving closer to us, and we could make out this massive shadow walk across the road. And that was sort of very, very north of Coonabarabran, so in the Pilliga scrub, or not in the middle of it, but kind of the very, very sort of forefront of the Pilliga scrub there. So many things that actually happened there. Absolutely. I think that the Pilligas is definitely a place that that invites that kind of really strange activity. But there is also another place I haven't really mentioned, and that's Hill End down towards Bathurst Way and Peel and Sunny Corner. And people have had Yowie experiences there. They've had lights following them, similar to what Don explained there. I was on an expedition there back in 2001, yeah. And sorry, I think it was we've done so much. And some of the lights that we saw there was just absolutely incredible. I saw a creature there too, which was a very, very incredible experience and a horrifying experience, even to this day. But there was just a whole bunch of different stuff that went on there. You know, again, I think the Australian wilderness itself. It doesn't matter where you go in the outback somewhere, you're going to bump into something.
Yeah.
You know, this is a very, very old land here, you know. I mean, we're talking about, you know, land here that's suffered a lot, you know, during colonization. I mean, we don't even know what happened to, you know, during the time in pre-colonization periods, you know, with when the First Nation ruled the land. You know, it's this story, I mean, this earth, this country itself is almost like a primordial soup of ancient relics that, you know, that wouldn't necessarily mean relics that you can pick up and hold, but things that are just floating around in the ether and occasionally come out of hiding when the timing is right.
I'll give you another one. Kilcoy up in Queensland's an interesting place. We did a couple of interviews there with some of the locals and the abattoir workers, and they have a big abattoir just on the outset, just as you go into Kilcoy. And they forever were having problems. They had these big industrial bins that, you know, a lot of stuff gets thrown in and slops and stuff from the abattoir. And they were forever come out and finding these huge, like we're talking 6 meter, I don't know, massive bins, they're huge, upturned. And stuff's been rummaged through. And, you know, the funny thing about Kilcoy, though, is that when you go down to the park down there, the park's called Yowie Park. And there's this massive statue of a Yowie that they have set up there representing the Yowie of the area that has been there for X amount of years. It's quite a funny story with it because they used to have a different statue there that was quite well endowed, I believe, or something like that. And every Father's Day, some of the locals would get a couple of balloons and kind of put the genitalia in the proper area of it and stuff like that, but they had to change because some of the old ladies got a bit offended by it. So they had a much more decent-looking Yowie there now. But none the same. I mean, it's still an area that has got a lot of history and a lot of bushland around it, very old. But it's very interesting to hear from the abattoir workers about all the problems they have. And it's a modern abattoir. It's big, huge, big security, like all sort of stuff. But, yeah, they sort of have these problems with it, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting because places like that, they've never been on my thought process to potentially be hotspots. But when you hear it just now, it's plainly obvious that a place like that would potentially get a lot of attention from things like that. And not only that, because we're starting to see a lot of big cat sightings coming out in Australia lately. We saw that really fantastic footage that got captured a couple of weeks ago. And it kind of leads credence to thoughts of, you know, is that something in that area as well now?
I found that really interesting, that footage. What I liked about it, that it happened in Wirunga, of all places. And, like, if you know Sydney, like, Wirunga's quite a well-to-do upper North Shore suburb, you know. Like, and, again, it's backed onto really nice bushland, but it's an expensive suburb and, you know, it was interesting, that just sort of very random, but the footage itself, I actually found it to be compelling. It was great to see finally something that just wasn't a blob squatch. It was just not a trail cam that's caught something and you're kind of going, yeah, it could be a possum. This was absolutely something. This was a cat of some, like a feline of some description. I mean, Attila, what's your call on it?
Look, I think we discussed this when we had a phone call, Don, the other day, and I think that you made some really good points. And, I mean, just the actual muscle tone, the way it was holding its tail, especially when it stopped motionless and turned around and looked at the cameraman, because I think the cameraman may have tried to get a little bit closer. Yeah. And you can actually see that boxy look that you actually get from big cats. And I'm not talking about your local feral cat here. I'm talking about things that you find in other parts of the world, such as panthers and leopards and the like. So You look at that footage, and I actually compared that with footage of panthers in captivity and in the wild in other countries, and it suits the profile just perfectly. And I'm not surprised, because on an expedition we went not so long ago, when I was filming track, on our way out we smelt this almighty and foul cat urine. You know, it was so strong, and it was in an area that on Federal Pass in the Blue Mountains, and it was between the Golden Staircase and Ruin Castle. And all the guys that were hiking smelt it too. It was very, very strong, very sort of ammonia. It had a very ammonia sort of element to the smell, to the odor. And it was definitely very something that you'd smell from a feline, you know, doing a wee in your front yard. But, I mean, amplify that by about 100. It makes your eyes water. So there's obviously something big down there. And there's a time when we were on top of a cliff overlooking the valley there, and we heard this. It wasn't a roar, but it was like a wildcat screaming out, you know, that certain tone that big cats use, like leopards and panthers and all that have that, and even bobcats, you know, in America, they have that specific scream when they're attacking something. We actually heard that in the valley there in the Blue Mountains somewhere, again overlooking you know, Cedar Creek and looking towards the Bargerang, and you had Mount Solitary on one side, so it was coming from that sort of area there. So look, I'm not surprised. I think that we do have a collection of different animals here. Now, whether or not they're indigenous is another question.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, I don't know what the spec is for a domesticated pig. How long does it take a domesticated pig to become almost like a razorback before the tusks start to grow and stuff? Mm-hmm. It was something like, I thought it was 3 months, but it could even be less. It might even be 1 month before. I think it's like a 3 month or a 2 month transformation from a domestic pig to start to become one of these muscular, feral sort of animals that you see out there. Its need to survive was that great that they've just got that sort of hidden DNA that just goes, "Whoa, we're out of here." I'm wondering what the sort of story is with cats as well, but I think that looked like a bloody big cat if it was a domestic cat.
It's some of the most
circus, really. Let's just face it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's definitely the most compelling piece of evidence I've seen when it comes to big cat sightings here in Australia, because the problem with these cats is that they're all big black cats. You know, they're panthers, they're cougars, they're leopards, whatever that may be. And it's pretty well known that back when Australia was getting colonized, these were kind of the pets that the famous, the rich would have. It's very
military
exotic.
Had them as well.
Yeah, exactly. So the fact that, you know, it's been recorded that they've just let them go out into the wild, and Australia is one of these countries that has no apex predators. You've got the crocodile and that's it, really. There's nothing out there that's going to hunt these creatures down. It's basically, they've got free roam of the country. So
you got to think about it. What was that documentary, the cat one that's on Netflix? That one went bananas over 3 months ago.
Yeah, the one that was on.
What was it called again?
I think it was just called Big Cats or something.
Cats or something. You know the one I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Basically, you've got these guys that collect these things. They kind of revealed how there's an underground sort of trading and sale of these domestic sort of or these strange exotic animals and stuff like that. Surely. There must be something like that happening in Australia. I know that Australian wildlife, like cockatoos and stuff, end up overseas and stuff. Yeah. So they're obviously in the black trade here. And there's a documentary idea for you straight away there to get up. But, you know, who's to say, you're right, who's to say that some exotic collector didn't have one of these and it's kind of escaped and run off and, you know, didn't come home?
Yeah, absolutely. So, guys.
Yeah, there was Doco as well. What was that documentary, Attila, that just recently?
That's the Australian one, yeah? That was on Discovery Network. Yeah, it was the Hunt, I think.
Yeah, The Hunt. Yeah, The Hunt. Yeah.
Perfect timing for them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I know that documentary was in the making for quite some time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the production company's down in Victoria. I think they're down in Melbourne, but they did a pretty good job.
It was beautiful.
It was very well done. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I reckon we might wrap it up there tonight. It's been a very, very insightful chat. We kind of covered off everything that we'll look into to just chat about in general, because it's been a while. And where's the best place people can find your stuff? We'll start with you, Attila.
The links for the content that I've been making, Moonlark Media, is paranormalinvestigators.tv. Now, if you go to that website, you'll see most of the stuff that we've made over the years, and you'll have the links there to where to watch some of this, some of the content.
Awesome. And yourself there, Don?
AustralianSkies.com, and just go onto iTunes and all the usual streaming platforms. You can track down some of the stuff that we're working on.
And for anyone who's watching and doesn't know who I am, I host the podcast Believe, and you can find that on every podcast platform that basically exists, and or go to believepod.com, and you can listen to all the episodes for free there, which I've had Attila and Don on multiple times each.
Thanks for having us, Matt, again.
I think we should do this a little bit more often, because this was fun, and I can see that the chat's lit up. We've got lots of people engaged, and I mean, the door's always open, guys, if you ever want to do this again.
No problem.
Sounds great, mate.
All right.
No worries.
Too easy, guys. Cheers.
And that's going to do it for tonight. And remember, if you have had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au. Or you can message me on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/believeUFO radio. Until next time, stay safe, and you've been listening to Believe, Australian Paranormal and UFO Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.